I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
The executive director of YouServe Utah. We talked about the 9/11 Day of Service and Remembrance and all the ways that we can serve throughout the state. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. Today we have a really fun episode with a dear friend of mine, LaDawn Stoddard. She is the executive director of YouServe Utah and the Utah Commission on Service and Volunteerism. Welcome.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here, LaDawn. We've been friends for several years now. You've worked with my husband on many things. Talk to me a little bit about who you are and your background. Where'd you come from?
So I grew up in a pretty large family. I'm the oldest of seven. And my parents had this inkling about every 2 years to move to a different location. It started off, my dad was in sales. And so back in the day when it before internet or any of that, you got transferred, right? Mm-hmm. So every couple of years, he'd be transferred to a new location. After he left sales, he still really liked that. And so I was born in Arizona. I've lived in just about every Western U.S. state, California, Colorado, Arizona, Utah, Idaho, Washington, even spent a few years in Alaska as a teenager. So,
where in Alaska?
Anchorage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my dad was up there during the pipeline boom where they were building the Alaskan pipeline. And so he did sales within that area. And yeah, we spent about 3 years up there.
Wow. So what? How old were you when you were up there?
That was from 6th, 7th, and part of 8th grade.
So middle school.
Yes.
How was that?
Oh, you know, it was fun. You know, Alaska's a really diverse area. It's got a lot of Air Force bases and military bases. And so it's a really diverse and interesting population. So a lot of things learned when I was younger about just getting to know different cultures and different people. So.
Oh, interesting. And so you probably do you feel like that, because that's a pretty formative time.
It is.
And so, you know, and folks in military, they're moving around a lot as well. So you probably had a lot of middle school friends that were in a similar, a similar situation.
All
as
of
you.
Us kind of came in and out, and it was, there was a lot of transition going on at that time. It didn't feel quite as intense when I was in middle school, and then moving three more times before I graduated high school was where it got a little more intense.
Wow. So intense meaning it was harder?
Just hard. It's hard. I vowed that I was not going to move my children, you know, because of that. You either do exactly what your parents do or you do opposite. And and I really wanted to give them not have them feel that way. But I have three boys, and I think I've learned that boys, maybe it's a little easier than girls sometimes in those transitions. Not completely, but so we did. We just moved once while my children were young. I've been married for a long time. I'm not going to go into years. It will date me. But married my high school sweetheart. Kind of a similar story to a little bit of yours.
So you were there long enough in high school to meet.
Actually, we met and he left to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints while I was still in high school. And so he went off on his mission and I moved right after that from Idaho, Rexburg, where I met my husband, to Utah, graduated from American Fork High School. I went the end of my junior and my senior year there, graduated, and then got married shortly after graduation.
So oh, really?
He was back. So it was about I graduated in May and got married in October. So
wow. Yeah. So you're very young.
Very young. I jokingly used to tell people that I started having children when I was 12. But being from Utah, you can't say that out of state because they don't know if you're joking or not.
There's a few things you can't say in Utah that, you know.
So I stopped saying that. I started just using the term very young. But yeah, I had three children by my early 20s. So.
Wow. And so, I mean, good, bad, I mean, I guess it's all you know, but I mean, do you always feel like you...
I think there's good and bad to it. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I raised my husband very well.
No, I mean, we joke about that, but Spencer and I, you know, because we started dating... Well, we were really good friends, you know, earlier on in high school, and then didn't start really dating until he was... had graduated and I was a senior, and then he was going to Snow College. And so, but I do feel like in a lot of ways, and then again, he left on a mission. We wrote back in the day, it wasn't email, it wasn't phone calls. It was just writing letters, which to Mexico took, by the time you got an answer to a question that you asked, it was at least a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a little tricky that way, but I always say to people, like, I feel like we really did grow up together.
It's exactly how I feel. And I think there's pros and cons to that. If you work at it, you grow up together. If you think whatever happens in your life, you can grow up and grow apart. But yeah. I feel like we grew up together. And yeah, it's all I really know. But I didn't encourage my kids to start that young at all, right?
I feel like it's a little different. Now, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I haven't either.
I'm like, oh, yeah, just you know, don't get serious in high school. Just yeah. So
I know. And then you feel a little hypocritical. But
I do. But it wasn't a hard push because they weren't inclined that way. Yeah. So. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about you graduated from American Fork.
I did.
And then what?
So married, raised kids. I didn't go back to college until I was almost 40.
Okay. That's what I wondered.
Did my college, my schooling, started with I work for the Commission on Service and Volunteerism, USERV Utah, and I started there part-time. I was looking for a part-time job for my oldest son. He was... How old would he have been? He was like 16 when I was looking for just a part-time job. I had owned a small business for a time, and then we had sold that and I wasn't working. And so I was looking for a part-time job for him, and I came across this and thought it sounded interesting. At first, I didn't know it was with state government at all, right? They didn't broadcast that. And I went through the whole interview process and didn't know it was with state government until I was actually filling out the papers. I had been offered the job. And I thought, oh, state of Utah, interesting. So
I'm working in government now and I didn't know it.
And so because they were down in Orem in a small building, just kind of seemed like a nonprofit in some ways. And so started part-time there. And 17 years later, I'm still there and loving every minute of it. So,
well, so let's talk about this. So USERV Utah, just
yes.
Let's talk a little bit about it. Does feel like a nonprofit.
In some ways, yeah.
In a lot of ways, but also tell me the connection, how the government... how it works and maybe how it interacts with
sure.
the rest of the nonprofit world.
Yeah. So it was started in 1994. President Bush had a couple years earlier started, you remember the famous speech where he said 1,000 points of light, right? And people yeah. needed to step out of themselves and become this, you know, give back to their communities and different things. And he started a part of the federal government that was not a government agency. It was a council on community service. And he started that. And then after he left, Bill Clinton came into office and he took that council and created a government entity called a federal agency called the Corporation for National and Community Service. And that agency grants out resources for AmeriCorps programs across the state. When it started, it was supposed to be this joint state and federal program. And it still is very much that way. The funding comes from the federal government, goes to states. It goes to a state service commission like ours. So there's an organization like ours in every state across the country. And in order to access the AmeriCorps funding, they had to set that up.
Okay.
It can either be part of state government or it could be a standalone nonprofit, a 501c3. And in a handful of states, it is a nonprofit. But it has to have this – the commission is technically the board of directors. So your husband, when he was lieutenant governor, served on our commission board. And so if you want to get into real technicalities, we're just staff to the commission itself. So the commission is the body, the 20-member entity. And so, we've been – for over 25 years now, we've been giving grants out to nonprofits to run AmeriCorps programs. When they established it in Utah, they wanted it to be broader than just AmeriCorps. So we had a part of the original executive order that Governor Leavitt signed talked about just community engagement in general and volunteerism. And so we've always had these kind of two focus areas. One side is AmeriCorps and the other side is just volunteerism. And we're the central coordinating body for service and volunteerism. And our goal is to promote and inspire volunteerism across the state of Utah. We also work heavily in that side of our shop on building capacity for nonprofits for volunteerism. It feels really very much like you should just know how to what to do with volunteers. And people don't really always understand that there's infrastructure needed, right? I mean, you do your days of service and your focus area and service and the amount of behind the scenes that happens just to make that happen. And so there is a need for that within our state.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Service doesn't just happen. And yes, we want to just show up and volunteer a lot of times, but I think people maybe aren't always aware of the groundwork that has to happen before those projects can go forward and then people can be served.
We have a lot of nonprofits, too, that we have so many volunteers in the state. We have so many. And I think sometimes people aren't aware of just how unique and different we really are. My counterparts in other states ask us all the time, you know, how do you do it? And we're not that far ahead when they do the rankings in overall percentage, but what we call intensity. So the average volunteer nationally gives about 28 hours a year. The next closest state to us is about 40, and we're in the 80s hours a year per individual. And so that's just a huge impact. But it's not always utilized in the best way, right, to make the most impact you can make with that particular resource. So
yeah, that's a really incredible point. So let's talk a little bit more about this as we come right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I have LaDawn Stoddard here with me today. She is the executive director of YouServe Utah. We had a little media tour
yes,
last week. We actually had a really fun day where we hit a lot of the news stations, a lot of news shows, a lot of morning shows. Had an interview with the Trib. Had interviews with some radio stations here at KSL, or radio shows here at KSL, and we were talking about 9/11. So LaDawn, tell me a little bit. Let's tell our viewers a little, or our listeners, about the 9/11 Day of Service that's coming up.
First off, thank you so much for everything that you did. That media tour was slightly exhausting, and
just a little. But
we're so appreciative of your support. So 9/11, I love a quote that one of the an individual who had a good friend that passed away from 9/11 during 9/11 said. He says it's not so much about what happened on 9/11 as what happened on 9/12, right? How the country came together, how it unified, and so there's been, since that, the next year, the 1 year anniversary, there's been a focus on trying to make that day something else to be remembered, right? By, instead of the tragedy that we all saw, trying to make it more of a day of remembrance and honor and recognition, but also a day of unity. And we need unity right now more than ever. So there is a national coalition, and anybody who wants to kind of understand what they're all about, it's 911day.org. It's a national coalition that's brought together a lot of organizations that is focused this year specifically with the 20th anniversary. And their goal is to do 20 million acts of service across the country, acts of service and kindness across the country in recognition of the 20th anniversary of 9/11. There's a few days that kind of stand out as national days of service. We've got several, but the ones that probably stand out with most significance are MLK Day of Service and then this one, 9/11. It's developed quite a bit of prominence around a day of service in the last few years. So we're excited to see there's projects everywhere across the state. I was going through them last night trying to find a good list for Saturday. We're excited that am I okay to say the yeah. Governor and First Lady are going to visit a few projects, and my eyes got tired. It was just pages and pages, and it's everywhere. It's out in our most rural areas, San Juan County, clear up north in Rich County. I mean, it's all across the state. You can find a project no matter where you are in the state of Utah.
Yeah, and I guess to me it was the idea is just beautiful, because one of the things we were talking about on our media tour was the idea of sort of taking back or maybe recapturing the spirit after that day, the spirit of coming together, as a country. I remember feeling that after 9/11, it was sort of a common purpose, a common idea that this country, I guess, when it's under attack, we instead of attacking each other, which seems to be happening more and more, we felt a sense of purpose in coming and serving each other, which I thought was beautiful.
It's true. We all kind of saw ourselves as Americans and stood up for that for a little while anyway. And it is I'm old enough to remember kind of what happened. And, there was about a week afterwards where you just wanted to hug people. That's all you wanted to do. And we started recognizing our common humanity versus our differences. And service can do that for people. It tends to take you outside of yourself, right? You don't think about you anymore. You're typically exposed to someone potentially that has much greater need than you do in a lot of ways. It tends to give you perspective on your own problems oftentimes. And it's a lovely thing to serve another person. And it's not just the person receiving service that benefits. It's usually the person giving service often that can get a lot more.
Yeah, we did. The Farmers Feeding Utah did a lot last fall around getting folks, farmers had all this produce, all these things that they couldn't get to the supply chains through COVID were disrupted. And remember, working with them, we did a Thanksgiving a food donation thing where we brought all these, you know, working with the farmers of Utah, did boxes full of food to folks in our area in San Pete County. And we had all our extended family members out and we all put stuff in boxes and we had lists of folks that people had nominated, which was kind of beautiful too, because it wasn't people saying, I need this.
Yeah.
Because very rarely in Utah
do we step up and say, I need.
Yeah. It's sort of a part of our culture, our, you know, the way we think is we think surely somebody else needs more than I do right now. And, I just, you know, as we did that, I mean, just tears. We came back together and sort of talked about our experience and you said it, you know, you start to see perspective and we get caught up so much in our own issues and we yell at each other on Facebook and we come at each other because we don't think, you know, somebody's doing thing the way I would do it. And it just has a way, service has a way of just letting all that disappear and just really reconnecting. Like you said, to our common humanity. I just think some of our choicest moments as a family have been during service, during, you know, times when we've gotten out and stopped fighting with each other, stopped getting mad at each other, you know, and
yeah.
just walking out and doing something for somebody else that is in need. I think it's a beautiful thing that we can do as a state too.
It is. And there are, I'm a huge proponent of there's needs in our own backyard. Sometimes people get caught up when they think of service. It needs to be what we call sexy, right?
Yeah.
It needs to be international or it needs to be, and don't get me wrong, because there are needs everywhere across the world. But we really do have needs right here. And it just warms my heart to see people stepping up and recognizing, you know, those needs. And oftentimes, like you said, it's not someone who is crying for help. It's someone maybe not vocally, but internally. And you may never hear that. And we need to, I think we all just, if we could take a minute and just be more cognizant of what's going on around us, we would see those needs pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I think that's what dawned on us as we were doing this service project last Thanksgiving was, you know, we live in this community. We drive through these towns daily. I had no idea, you know, we're finding addresses somewhere. And then we come upon a little house that's not much and we knock on the door and inside there's a grandma taking care of grandkids.
Yeah.
Who she just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
With gratitude, just crying, saying, I had no idea anybody cared, but she was struggling.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think when you talk about in our own backyards, that's what was driven home to me that day, was looking around my towns that I participate in, that I do things in every day, and having no idea that people were struggling like that.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, we are taught to be very self-sufficient and very independent. And it's really hard. I can personally say it's really hard to say I need help. I mean, I'm not good at it. And so I totally understand and empathize with people that don't feel comfortable stepping up and saying that. But on the flip side of that, there are people that really, we have a state that wants to help. And we've learned nothing else, there's a couple things about getting people out. And the first one is they don't know the need. And the second one is they don't know how. They don't know how to engage. And so once their awareness, the need is brought to their awareness and they're given a tool on how to help, we're inundated with volunteers. And so, it's just the way our state works.
And you have the opportunity and the resources to put that infrastructure that we talked about in place.
Yeah.
So that these projects can go forward.
Yeah. What we try to do is work with nonprofits and help them be thoughtful about how to engage volunteers. So sometimes, you've got, most people think of service in like what we're going to do on Saturday, these great big events. But a lot of nonprofits just need someone to come in and help answer phones for a couple of hours. Or, you know, there's kids in school that need that need tutoring and they need some volunteers to get in and do that. There's a variety of things that are not big events. And in reality, what we're trying to do is help elevate awareness for individuals to understand what those are and for nonprofits to be thoughtful about how they can effectively use volunteers. Like you and I both have had an experience where we go and volunteer and it's not really meaningful. You know, yes, that they just kind of put something out there because they're trying to, you know, they are trying to engage 50 volunteers. And so we're really being thoughtful about meaningful, impactful service that really will move the needle on issues, and not just stuffing envelopes. Now, don't get me wrong, because there's a time and a place for that. But there's this happy medium of trying to understand what works best for organizations.
Well, and I think all of us, we don't want to waste our time if it's not meaningful. And we don't want to waste the organization's time, and we don't want to, we could be doing, by wasting time, I mean, we could be doing an actual meaningful service that's really helping somebody versus something that, like you said, that just was like, oh, we need a service, so we're going to hurry and throw this together.
Yeah,
and I think what you're talking about is making sure that we're intentional, we are planning, and we are really organizing. First of all, knowing the need, and then making sure that whatever we're doing to serve that need is that it's working.
Yes.
That it's doing its job or serving its purpose. So I think that's really important. I want to get into talking about what service opportunities. In my experience, people come to me and say, well, I want to help, but I just don't know how, or I just don't know where, or where's the best thing. And I think like we talked about, there are people that say, I don't want to go do some fluffy thing that's actually not that helpful. How can I do something that's really going to serve a need that's present and immediate right now? So let's continue to talk about this. And I want you to give us some specifics when we come right back. We are continuing our conversation with LaDawn Stoddard, the executive director of YouServe Utah. And LaDawn, I want to go back to talking about that list, I guess, that we have of projects that are going around all over the state this Saturday on September 11th. It's our day of service. It's a national day of service. But in Utah, we take our volunteerism, our number one volunteerism spot very seriously. And I know that throughout the entire state, no matter where you are, there are projects going around you everywhere. So let's talk about a few of those today.
So a couple of big ones that I think would be helpful. There's a cleanup going on around the Jordan River Parkway, and it's starting at, like, I think, want to say 4500 South, and at different locations all the way down through Riverton, Bluffdale, there's cleanup projects happening along the Jordan River Parkway. JustServe.org has a list of most of these and everything else that's happening around the state. The same type of thing is happening around Utah Lake. Several of the beaches and parks that are along Utah Lake are doing cleanups. Seven different locations along Utah Lake, from American Fork, Linden, down in through Vineyard. So cleanup projects there. So family friendly, get the whole family out. But then there's projects up in Summit, Wasatch County. There's different projects. There's cemetery cleanups happening. There's down in Sandy, there's a project to paint fire hydrants.
I've done those.
A lot of, yeah. There's a lot of meal kits being done. There's, I wish I could remember. I was on Just Serve yesterday going through a lot of these projects, and literally every corner of the state, there is something happening. A lot of them outdoors. We're still in really great weather and not much chance of rain for Saturday. So a lot of outdoor projects happening in various locations. So,
yeah, I was remembering some of the ones I saw on the list. I know in Washington County, I think most of the towns, I think Washington, St. George, Hurricane, if I remember right. Again, look at the list on youserveutah.org. Just serve.org, and we'll list that at the end. But get on there and see. But I know that several cleanup areas were going on in those towns. I do remember seeing in Provo, they are doing, which I think is a really fun one, a bike repair service project where, you know, they're repairing kids' bikes. Which, you know, for me, when I was a kid, my bike was always had a pop tire or chain was off or something. So it's really nice to have that to be able to fix those for kids. I'm trying to think of some of the other. There's one going on in Moab, I know.
Yep. There's a lot happening in Weber Davis County also. There is a big project happening in recognition of Mayor Brent Wilson.
Taylor.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. Jenny, I know, is spearheading that and lots of projects, a lot of environmental park cleanups. There's going to be a lot of really clean parks after Saturday because there's a lot of park cleanups happening. Almost, I would say every community across the state is doing some type of park cleanup. So,
yeah, and you talked about cemetery cleanups.
Yep.
And I have to say, we did that on our tour when we were campaigning. We did, and it was shortly after Memorial Day. And If I know anything, it's you be careful what you take off those.
Yeah, that's true.
Those graves. They said, nope, if it's still here, you have to throw it out. I was like, we're going to get in trouble. I know how this is.
Well, a couple of the cemetery cleanups are actually cleaning headstones. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a demonstration on how to do that appropriately.
Oh, interesting.
First thing before they send out people to do it. So, because, you know, a lot of those headstones get water spots and faded, and so there's a lot of that happening.
Yeah, and sometimes I remember doing a project in Fairview around the cemetery once where we actually lifted a lot of them because a lot of them
had sunk.
Sink down, and so you can't see them and you can't. And that was an interesting project that we did in the cemetery. You don't want to do that late at night. But
yeah.
In the daytime, it's pretty good.
Yeah, there is just so much happening. And I have a couple of interesting stories. We've been working a little bit with the National Coalition for 9/11 Day, and they have put out challenges across the country. And director that I was talking to said, we thought we'd do a state-to-state challenge, right? So let's see which state would step up and really, really have a lot of service on 9/11. And then we realized that it wouldn't be a competition except for second place.
That's right.
Utah would be first. And,
congratulations
and then everybody
to whoever's taking second, third, fourth. We will always take the top spot.
They have really been very complimentary about how engaged our communities are across the state for this Saturday. So.
Well, and also, I mean, talk a little bit about, you and I have had this conversation about actual volunteerism, you know, the recorded volunteerism versus the actual volunteerism that goes on in our state. I mean, we're always number one for the recorded volunteerism, what we put down on paper. But talk a little bit about how Utah is so unique on the other side of volunteerism.
So the way that the rankings are done is it's done through the supplemental census through the U.S. Department of Labor. And there's just some questions asked about, do you volunteer? And I think the conversation that you're referring to that you and I had was the fact that so much of what we do, we don't think of as volunteering, like parents that are in children's schools helping, and they don't necessarily think of that as a formal type of volunteering, or dads that coach Little League, or, I mean, there's so much that happens. They did a few years back do what they call formal versus informal volunteering. And our formal volunteering rate, which means someone goes to an organization and volunteers for an organization, is about 51%. Our informal, which is neighbor helping neighbor, is close to 90% of individuals across the state that, wow, that engage in some sort of informal volunteering. And one is no better than the other, but sometimes the informal, it really is when there's heavy need. Like you have a neighbor that's really, you know, had some health issues or different situations. And sometimes that informal is really where the connection is made and where you really see how important it is in what you're doing.
Yeah. That is powerful. And I think you're exactly right. That is where the connection happens mostly. I hearken back to our dear friend Pamela Atkinson, who's been on our podcast before, but she talks a lot about fits of charity around Christmas time, which is not a bad thing. We want people to volunteer at Christmas time. It's one of the most beautiful things a family can do to really, you know, really have that spirit of the season and that kind of thing. But we also need to make sure that people understand the need throughout the year.
Very true. Food banks by March or April are sometimes running really low. And those are areas where oftentimes through the holidays you get a lot of donations. But there are needs all year long. And we used to run a campaign, and we haven't done it for a few years, that challenged people to commit. You know, yes, we're so excited that you're willing to give of your time and talents throughout the holiday. Pledge to do it sometime in May or June, right? And so, yeah, it is definitely – I don't know that we'll ever get away from seeing this heavy peak in during the holidays, but – I think we were just talking about this. People just need to be aware. They need to be aware of a need, and they need to know how they can help. Those two things, if people understand that, it doesn't matter what time of the year, they'll step up. The awareness seems to be elevated during the holidays. I think we can encourage awareness all year long.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important. I think this 9/11 day is a great way to do that. This is not the traditional holiday season, and it's a beautiful time, I think, to really have that remembrance of, you know, the sacrifice of those that have died, especially, you know, here we just recently had one of our own here in Utah, our soldiers die as he was helping the exit in Afghanistan, and just went to a memorial last week where it was, you know, just pretty heart-wrenching. And that brought home to me again all those feelings of 9/11 in this 20 years. This is the 20th anniversary of 9/11, the 20 years we've had people sacrificing after that day.
And they're volunteers of a sort, right? Yeah. All of our first responders, all of our military personnel, they volunteer to do what they are doing. They may be compensated for it, but no one compels them to do it. Yeah. And so it's a great way to recognize them for the service that they're willing to give us.
Yeah, and you talked about the first responders. It's, you know, when you live in a rural area, those are all volunteers. I mean, in our little Fairview, anybody on the ambulance is a volunteer. Anybody that's a firefighter is a volunteer, literally are not paid
yeah,
to do it. And they are just doing it to serve their communities. And it's beautiful. So I really appreciate you being here, LaDawn, today, talking about these very important issues. Service, I think, as a way of life is just what Utah's all about. And I know that because people know about this, when they know about it, and now they do, they know how to serve and the best ways to do that. We are going to take that top spot, and it's not even going to be close. So I appreciate that. Thanks, LaDawn.
Thank you.
You can find more information on how to serve and where to serve throughout the state at userve.utah.gov, as well as justserve.org to find all the service projects going on 9/11 this Saturday. Thanks for being a friend.